Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, Brother Onti, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay.
I don't see.
We had a couple of people
there.
Carry over.
Uh-huh.
We dropped a few. It's up to you if you want to just continue talking, and they'll catch up with us.
I think what we can do is give a quick recap and then continue. I was just... it looks like it says episode ended. It hasn't given us a counter for the new episode. What are you seeing on your screen?
Oh, that's what I'm seeing, episode ended. It's showing that a couple of callers have dropped, but those callers have, they're calling back in. So, I'm not for sure what's going on.
Let's play a little music while we figure this out. Family, bear with us. Did it monitor yet? Yeah.
Huh? It didn't do anything. I think we should just continue to talk, do as you said, do the recap.
Okay.
And the show will be ready, I think, you know, people can go back and listen to it.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can do the recap as you suggested, and we'll go on.
Okay. Well, family, basically, New Ujamaa is the revolution. And we're getting ready to talk about what is New Ujamaa in just a moment. The point that we were making about revolution, as we are using that term, in order to have a genuine revolution, not only must the political regime change, the economic model must change as well. If you change the political leadership but don't change the underlying economic model, the new leaders are only going to replicate what the old leaders were doing. Their rhetoric may be a little bit better, but at the end of the day, you're still going to wind up with an exploitative, oppressive, non-democratic, violent, and very dangerous society where people will be scrambling to find some safety and some peace of mind. So we're talking about revolution both in terms of changing the politics, but more importantly, changing the underlying economic system. And we said that was important because the economy is the place where the values and the worldview of the people who are participating in that economy is expressed. So if you want to have a society that is built upon genuine democracy where people are equal, where there is equity, where there is opportunity, where people can earn a standard of living that allows them to take care of their children and future generations, then you're talking about creating an economy that allows for all people to participate, whether they are black or brown or yellow or red or white. Everyone is on an equal footing in a different kind of economic model.
Right.
And
excuse me, Brother Onti.
Yes.
Baba Hakima's hand is up, I think. Yes, Baba.
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know I was here. Yeah, and I'll have some comments in a little bit.
Okay.
Okay.
Have you checked the online community, Baba, to see how – do we have – are they there? Or we, can we be heard now on the computer side?
I'll check. Just continue. I'll come right back.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
And the second point is that the economy shapes the way people relate to each other. So if we want an economy that is based on better interaction, where people are able to treat each other with respect and dignity, and value all human life, then you need an economic model that has those basic principles at its core. And so that's why we are talking about an economic revolution as well as a political revolution, and because we intend to, we are launching a very different worldview and a different set of values. A very quick word on the values again. New Ujamaa as an economic model is based on Ma'at, the African worldview called Ma'at, which is truth and justice and righteousness, order, balance, harmony, and reciprocity, and also the Nguza Saba, unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. So that's the lens that we in Us Lifting Us operate through. In other words, when we look at the world, what we are looking for is to see a community, a village, a society, a nation, a world that has truth at its center, that is serious about justice for all and righteousness as a way of behaving towards each other, a system of order that's based on the cosmic order of the universe, a system where there is harmony and balance and reciprocity. These are African principles that go way back to ancient Kemet, 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And these were the principles that allowed African civilization to be the most powerful civilization on the planet for tens of thousands of years. It went into decline because they got away from those core principles. But those principles are based on the actual cosmic order of the universe, and when we practice them, we'll get the same result.
Brother Amti.
Yes.
Yes. Everything's working on the Internet. So those that receive notices, that follow us, they would have gotten the new announcement. But, yes, we're being heard out on the Internet.
Okay, great.
With this
okay,
other
thank
episode.
You, Baba.
Good. I'd like to add, too, that, of course, when we say that in terms of revolution, you know, everything is turned over, the society changes, and, of course, the economics is at the base of society and incorporates the things that you've mentioned. But that economy has to be in our control. So, because if it's not in our control, it's in someone else's control, correct? And if
correct.
It's in someone else's control, they're going to manage it based on their value system. So if we, when we talk about the liberated communities, empowering ourselves in our communities, the task is to gain greater control of the economics of our own community through New Ujamaa. So if we are going to revolutionize or change or alter or restructure the economy, we might as well do it where we calculate that it would that it's going to reflect us and our values. And so I appreciate, you know, the value system that you talk about. But in addition to that, since we are compelled to rebuild the economy, then part of what Ujamaa says is that we integrate or infuse group-owned enterprises in the space and grow them where at there's an opportunity for them to take on a greater and greater percentage of the economic activity in our community so that we get to a point where the trade and commerce in our community is not dominated so much by individual inclinations, as you talked about earlier, the drive for excessive profits, greed, and a number of other things, but that naturally, because the businesses are cooperatives that we own, and because we own the businesses, the surplus belongs to us as well. So we're able to grow in the direction of our choosing because we've taken the responsibility of creating a new economy based on group ownership, and because we are the recipients and the beneficiaries of the surplus, then we can envision growth in the direction that we choose. And what that does is, like most things in nature, if something becomes dominant, it forces something else to become less dominant. So it's a situation where we can engineer in the patterns, behaviors, and values that we champion, that we consider most important, and begin to override some of the negative aspects that you talked about earlier. But to me, that's the essence of revolution, is that we've replaced a repressive, oppressive, rotten, you know, economic system with something that's wholesome and in alignment with the planet, with life, and our values, so that we're not only producing some benefits and some practices that we prefer now, but we also mold in the future so that the children and future generations have something wholesome in which to live and to thrive in. That was deliberately, purposefully engineered by those of us in place to do it now. So I'd like to make a suggestion. Next week for Dare to Win, we probably should continue the discussion. You know, we got a little interrupted this evening, but you know, next week is New Ujamaa as well. So, you know, hopefully right. We can continue the discussion.
Baba, you touched on something, and I think it's important that we break it out a little bit, expand okay. on it. New Ujamaa, as envisioned and practiced by Us Lifting Us, is group ownership of the economy through cooperative businesses. So we use the term cooperative, and we say to our members and to people who are following us that we want to build a network of cooperative businesses. People who are familiar with cooperatives have one understanding of cooperative, but New Ujamaa is a hybrid form of cooperative. Help our listeners understand what is unique about New Ujamaa as this hybrid cooperative. because then I think people will begin to understand how this empowers the community.
I mean, it's so revolutionary. It once you understand it, you almost shake, you know, because it's so powerful. But what we're saying is that consider the businesses in our community now. Essentially, there are big box, big corporations that represent it, medium, small, for the most part, capitalist-driven. The values that you point out earlier are dominant. And so when we say what we're going to do is pool our resources and then build group-owned enterprises or community-owned enterprises that reflect our values, but they also employ people. They move products, goods, and services. They stimulate the local economy like any business. But because they are group-owned, community-owned, and I'm going to point the difference between what we generally think of co-ops and our model, but because of that, then we're in a position to capture and redirect a greater percentage of the economic flow through our communities for our growth, for the purposes that we intend. So what's the difference between a regular co-op that most of us are familiar with? If you're familiar with a credit union, you're familiar with a co-op. But there are other kinds of co-op. There are producer co-ops, food co-ops, worker-owner co-ops. In every scenario that we generally talk about, the membership is limited to the workers, the patrons, the members of that particular co-op, and it stops there. The ULU model is broader. It's much, much broader. So our members in Ghana, our members in Europe, our members in Canada, if they've made a decision to also be an owner and acquire equity in our for-profit component of Us Lifting Us, then they are considered, not only considered, but they are practically owners, members of the co-op that may be located in Atlanta. So every business that we incubate is going to be owned by all of ULU. And when those businesses mature and begin to produce a surplus, the surplus is based on a formula. Is going to be shared strategically. Most of it is going to be reinvested for growth, but a percentage of it will go to increase the value of the shares that our members globally possess. And so what we're looking at, for instance, in Atlanta, we have a food co-op called Seven Unders, and it has in excess of 3,000 members. And so, but if that co-op produces a profit, what they do, they reinvest it in lower prices and add on more products, goods, and services for the members. But that co-op does not have as a part of its design to empower the community. In our situations, the goal is to empower the community and then to use surplus when it's available. It may not always be available, but to use surplus to expand the number and the sizes and the variety of business holdings that we do have. And so the co-op that we speak of in ULU will have global members, local members, yes, regional members, yes, national members, yes, but global members. Every member of ULU, in one way or another, is a stakeholder. And so that's the biggest difference, because we're using this model to gain control of the economics of our community and to keep, to the extent possible, the benefits of that business activity in our community. So what we're doing is reverse engineering Black Wall Street, or any of the communities of business excellence that we talked about in the early 1900s. So we have a design where we use capital from wherever we get it, pool it, and invest in business enterprises in our community that are owned by the community, and that the surplus and the other benefits, to the extent possible, stay in our community as opposed to floating off to Korea or floating off to Israel or floating off to Europe or to, you know, multinational corporations right here. Ultimately, we'll be able to own banks, insurance companies, manufacturing concerns, farms, transportation, hospitality. So we'll start small, obviously, but we'll grow. But essentially, we are actualizing what a lot of brothers and sisters say as a slogan when they say free the land. We're actually implementing a economic paradigm that allows us to incrementally gain greater and greater control in the community. But the point that you wanted to clarify is that the co-ops that we speak of, the Ulu co-op business enterprises, are multi-stakeholders, and that the workers will have some ownership, members in the local community will have some ownership, but members globally have the choice of having some ownership as well. So we all own all of the enterprises together. And if a business is located in Atlanta and it produces a profit, it produces the profit for everybody, not just for the people in Atlanta.
And I think the last point that I would just add to what you were saying is that, so that we're operating a cooperative enterprise. So the owners who the workers who work in that business are owners in the cooperative. The community where that business sits are also owners of that business if they're Ulu members. There may be churches in that community that also could be members of that and owners of that business as Ulu members.
Right.
So that, too, because the point that I thought was just really radical, we've all, for those of us who live in cities that have co-op businesses, like we in Atlanta have the Sevenanda grocery store as a cooperative, but the only people who participate in that co-op are the 3,000 owners, members, and the employees that work there, so that the churches that are across the street or around the corner are not necessarily members of that co-op. The community organizations that are part of that neighborhood are not necessarily members of that co-op. In the Ulu model, every institution and individual in the community can be a member of the co-op if they choose to do that. And we invite all of them to be stakeholders in each Ulu cooperative enterprise. That way the entire community is empowered as these businesses generate surplus that then is available to go back into the businesses, to strengthen them, and to open new businesses. That is a radical and really very exciting way of harnessing the economic energy in our communities. And so it really makes this idea of group ownership real, at least in my mind, so that when we move to the community, all of the enterprises that are Ulu enterprises, each person in the community can say, I own that. Not just the people who work there. So I think that's very empowering and extremely exciting for us.
And the worker in the business participates as a team member in managing the business, but the worker, in addition to receiving a fair salary, there may be benefit packages, but the worker also receives a bonus from the earnings. In other words, if the business is productive and produces a surplus, a portion of the surplus belongs to the workers. And then the worker also has an opportunity to be an owner in all of the enterprises that Ulu owns. So the worker, in addition to a salary and maybe a benefit or part of a benefits package, a bonus as a worker in a business that's successful, and also receive a part of the profits from other co-op businesses in the network of co-op businesses that we own. So the worker is really puts himself in a good position where he's a team member and he's not bossed or not exploited as in some businesses, but also receives bonuses and parts of the profits, not only from that local business, but all of the businesses combined. And so we can see ourselves creating industries for our own children, our grandchildren, creating jobs, because to the extent that we're successful, then we're going to create a lot of new jobs. In some cases, we'll create the jobs, and we may not produce the surplus that we would like. But as long as we're breaking even, we're providing goods and services and stimulating the economy of the local community. But if other businesses are producing surplus, then they are drivers for the goals that we seek. I envision that in time we will have thousands of businesses that we own, small, medium, and large, and many of them will not be startups. Many of them will be businesses that were already established in our community, but for whatever reason is up for sale, some of which may already have a positive profit flow. And to the extent that we can, keep on brothers and sisters who are managers, who are skilled in running that business, and then in some cases, some of those basic businesses can be turned into cookie cutter situations. In other words, it may be a business, let's say that we purchase here in Atlanta, but we can look at it and know that it will work in 15 or 20 other cities as well. Mm-hmm. And we already have the skill set, the knowledge of how to run that business in place. So the learning curve would be a lot sooner and a lot smoother than if everything was a startup. And then ultimately, we're going to be in a position to purchase large business. I just think sometimes when we look at our community, the amount of denim that we wear, you know, there's got to be a denim factory someplace for sale. Let's buy it, and let's buy the expertise, or let's pay for the expertise to run it until we get our own people up to speed so that we can take it over totally in terms of all the skill sets and everything that, that may. So we can look at every industry in that way. That, you know, because the capital is going to be in place based on our model, because what we are doing, we have a nonprofit component where we can take the take advantage of donations, of fundraisers, crowdfunding, and if we happen to fall into it, grants. But much of that can be put into funding new enterprise. But the greater percentage of investment capital is going to come from us who are members who make a decision to be a part of the for-profit aspects of our plan which involves investment clubs following the guidelines of Securities and Exchange Commission, and that will be a major funding source. But I want to make one point, and then I'll shut up, is that ultimately the greatest funding source we will ever have are successful businesses, businesses that mature and begin to return a surplus. And so funding that comes from our members and or donations or grants or however through the nonprofit will be surpassed in later years by the surplus generated from production and distribution of products, goods, and services.
Well, you were right, Bob. We've run out of time, and we will have to continue this conversation because the last point that I wanted to talk to our audience about was the UBC as the vehicle, the Ulu-based communities. That's the vehicle that actually operationalizes the new Ujamaa economy. So we'll pick that up in the next segment, which really lays out the invitation, Matt, for everybody to come on board and help build the rest of this infrastructure to set up the new Ujamaa economy in the spaces where we live. Sister Q, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
So
you want to close it down?
Yes, I will. Thank you all for joining us this evening. I don't know what happened, how I made a 15-minute program, but that's a whole other story. So we invite you to join us again next Thursday, and I'll make sure it's not 15 minutes at 9 o'clock for another installment of Dare to Win.
Peace. For the record, you handled it well. The first time I did that, Sister Q, we just shut it down. We were completely lost.
Oh, okay. Oh, so I'm not so special after all. It's not the first time this has happened. Okay.
No,
that,
it's not
that
the
really
first
makes
time.
Me feel better.
Okay.
All right. So thank you all.